This podcast is brought to you in association with very.co.uk. Topshop has landed at Very. Check out the latest range and must-have pieces. Head to very.co.uk and order online now. Hi, welcome back to Open Mind with me, Frankie Bridge. Today I'm really excited because I've got the Matt twins on. I've got Alana.
Hello.
And Lisa.
Hi, pal.
McFarlane. They're identical twins from Scotland. They're known as being the UK's hottest young media personalities. They are DJs, they make music, radio and TV, as well as being able to entertain live audiences, both big and small. But I've asked you to come on here today because you guys do a load of stuff about gut health and how it affects our mental health. Mm-hmm. And that's been like my new thing that I've been interested in lately, as well as everyone else. Mm-hmm. So what kind of like started you on this gut journey in the first place?
So obviously we were kind of DJs by night and living quite a hedonistic life. So really loads of late hours, eating rubbish. We're brought up in Scotland, so we're basically brought up on deep fried pizza and chips and mm-hmm. softies. So we're like the last people in the world that we thought we'd ever be talking about gut health. But we volunteer for Twin Research, which is a research facility at King's College. And we basically did that because you essentially get a free BUPA test and you go and you get everything checked. And everyone's like, medical research, do you get paid a grand to take Viagra? And you're like, not really.
You don't get paid.
Yeah, we don't get paid. But they look into everything. So like bone density, mental dexterity. Mine is a lot higher than Alana's, FYI.
Oh, really?
For that test, you get asked to name animals, right? And Alana was just like, cat, dog. Puffin, pigeon. Like,
Lisa reeled up about 40.
I would never have gone with puffin.
I mean, no.
That's not even in my
cat, dog, giraffe,
mouse.
Yeah, exactly. Your bone dexterity was a lot higher, though.
So. Yeah, exactly. Which means I'll probably live longer, so.
Ouch.
But when we were on that journey, without getting too sciencey, we'll try and like put a bit of science in, but the Human Genome Project had just happened. So that's when they could sequence DNA and use big data to sort of make assumptions about people's health, which now is commercialised with DNA tests and stuff. And they realised that they could use the same technology to sequence your gut, so your gut microbiome. So that just happened in the States, and they do a lot of research on twins because we have exactly the same DNA, obviously, and they're quite a good variable for scientific research. So Tim Spector, who leads the research facility there, was like, do you just want to have your guts tested? And we're like, ah, sure, what do we have to do? And he's like, you have to send your poo off in the post every day for 2 months.
Oh, wow. I don't even poo every day.
In the post.
News alert. Like, I would really struggle with that.
Yeah. Well, and they were just kind of like, wait, even when you can, but then you get really stressed out. Yeah. Because they'd be emailing you like, do you have another one? And you're like, wait.
Do you have another poo?
You'd literally have to put it in the post box. Yeah. Like, go to the post box.
Oh, my God. Do you think the postman knows?
I know. I was like, well, can you smell it?
But and then we had to have like 3 colonoscopies, which we didn't realize how like invasive they were until we started to sign the waiver form, and I was like, wow, this is quite a lot of pages.
3, like how close together?
Yeah, and
it was like a month apart, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and so a colonoscopy is when they put a camera
up your bum,
just so in case people don't.
Yeah,
know.
And you get to watch it as well.
I didn't watch it.
No,
I was not watching.
Wee bits of poo floating past. And
really?
But the doctor was really hot that was doing it. And he was like, sir, where do you live? Cambridge Town? And you're like, oh my God, you've actually got a camera up my bum. Anyway, I text all the scientists being like, if you get nothing out of this medical research, I'll be absolutely furious because I've just had a camera up my bum with some guy asking me if we're all going to date in Cambridge Town. Anyway, luckily, they realised, so we did like 2 months of experiments. So like 1 month we had to eat just processed foods and drink loads of alcohol, which for the first week's like, way! And then you're like, okay, this is actually quite painful. And then the second week we had to use like variety and fibre and stuff, and get onto that in a bit. But they realised from our bodies that even though we have 100% the same DNA, we only have 30% the same microbiome in guts, which is the same as strangers, essentially.
Right.
So that means a couple of things. It means that you're obviously not born with it and you can change it. So it's mm-hmm. not your DNA. And also that you can change it within about 2 weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you have bad guts, there is hope. But so they did that. Then they studied like 200 other sets of twins after us and then the public, and they realised that this was a thing. So we obviously became really fascinated by it because we were speaking to scientists from like the head of Parkinson's research, immunologists, like it wasn't just gastroenterologists that were part of the research.
Yeah.
So we were like, oh, let's just do a little YouTube series interviewing some of the scientists. Because if our pals knew this, they'd probably start to change the way they thought about diets. And also, like, if we can't be sold the same thing as twins, that one size fits all model that we work, that's currently in, that all the clean eating backlash and all that nonsense and detox teas and stuff. It was kind of the perfect storm at that time for somebody to be coming at it with scientific background. Anyway, did a little YouTube series, 6 episodes turned into 36 episodes.
Oh, blimey.
And we set up thegutstuff.com. I mean, Alana, it was like, Alana made a little shit Adobe Photoshop logo, which apparently looked like a gut. I was like, that shit. And it was meant to look like a microbe. It was meant to look like a microbe. I was like, certainly looks like bacteria. So set up gut.com and it was just like putting scientific papers up. And then the New York Times hailed gut health, as everyone knows, as like the kind of new trend for 2017. Yeah, and now we have an office with going up to 12 members of staff and a fully fledged global business.
Really?
Yeah.
Purely about the gut.
Yes. Yeah. So all about, and I think as well, like the main sort of fire in our belly was when we started to see the link.
all the puns.
Puns galore. Gut in touch. We've got them all. But the link between gut health and mental health was the thing that really, like when we found out around 90% of serotonin is actually produced in your gut, the happy hormone, when I was like, wow, like this is going to open doors to a lot of new things for everyone. And also where we're from in Scotland, like our dad died of a heart attack in his 50s. And I feel like if he knew half the stuff that we knew now, then he'd still be here. Yeah. And I think there was a bit of, God, this stuff's really interesting. And if it stops our pals doing the cabbage soup diet. Remember that? We did it pre-Magaluf 2005.
Oh, did you have the farts?
We had the farts.
Oh, awful. Yeah. I think we ended up putting tomato ketchup in it just to taste a bit better.
I feel like that probably counts.
Yeah. Oh my God, totally. Yeah. And then we went and drank like 14 litres of vodka over 2 weeks. So it was like so pointless.
So again, you changed your gut.
Exactly. Even age 16 or whatever age we were.
We pickled it, basically, I think.
Don't condone underage drinking, by the way.
No,
in Magaluf before.
Was there a reason why the mental health part of it, jumped out at you? Was it a personal thing or was it just because?
Yeah, so when I've suffered with mental health issues in the past, and Alana hasn't, and this is purely anecdotal, by the way, but Alana's gut was in a lot better shape than mine. The diversity of all the bacteria in her stomach was a lot higher. I also moved to London 5 years before, so there was kind of a bit of an environmental thing, but I was in the priority for severe OCD when I was 21, I think, and anxiety. And I think just throughout of our kind of childhood, I've always had more mental health issues than
so
Alana.
You have, and you haven't had any.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think everyone suffers from anxiety in some shape or form. I think it's a spectrum, but certainly not as extreme as Lisa's was. And I think it got to a stage with you that it was inhibiting everyday life. And I think that's when you can really start to, you have to take action.
Yeah.
But even just, you know, mental health plays such a huge part in all our lives now because we all go 110 miles an hour. We all live in fight or flight mode. We don't give ourselves, we always think that business means to be busy, and we just put so much pressure on ourselves. And I think we all need to start thinking about mental health as a whole, like a whole package. And I think before, like, we always just thought of like health as not being ill, and well-being is just something that Gwyneth Paltrow talked about.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tush eggs and all that nonsense. But yeah, and I think we always as well thought that our head was something completely different from what happened to our body. So if we broke our arm, you'd just be like, oh, I broke my arm. And if mental health was just all in the brain. And I think now that seeing health as like an all-round picture is like a really interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah.
I think as well, it was kind of like in terms of like waves of trends with what people are interested in. Like, it's amazing now that mental health's getting all of the attention that it deserves, and that's down to people like you. But it went from like heart health to mental health and now gut health's a sort of new thing coming out, when actually we should be thinking about all of these things together. But I think for a lot of people, it's quite overwhelming. Like, you'll know as well, like, when you're trying to get your mental health back on track, it's like, right, citalopram, CBT, blah, 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 and you try everything at once. And it's like, actually, that approach can be equally as detrimental, because it's just that kind of perpetual cycle of trying to find things you just kind of want to be fixed. And it should be about introducing things and thinking about it as a longer term, more holistic thing. And it's exactly the same thing as dieting. We all go and crash diets, or we take out wheat and dairy and fun.
Anything nice.
Yeah, exactly. Or anything that we enjoy. And then that takes that, becomes so more stressful, which then is like perpetuates that cycle again. Mm-hmm. And we just think of diet and like, you're probably the same as us, like growing up in that sort of like working class environment, diet is like something you did 2 weeks before your holiday. And it wasn't something that this overall lifestyle, and the amazing thing about gut health is, it's different if you've got a gut health issue, but it's about adding things rather than taking things away and restricting lots of things. So that's the thing as well, that we were like, this is something that we can get on board with. And actually, because it's linked to so many things and overall health, everyone should be starting to think about the gut.
So with that in mind then, what's your diet like? Is it something you think about a lot?
We are
just talk about it.
Yeah. No, we're very much 80-20 on the diet front, I would say. Or yeah, like
even our team, like we've got a team of nutritionists and dietitians in the office with us. And like even little things, like it's not, I mean, it's a lot, obviously a lot about what you eat, but how you eat. So eating mindfully, like in our office, we all sit down and have lunch together, for example.
Oh,
yeah. And I think that's important, like to like chew your food properly, eat mindfully, like sit down and tell your body that it's ready for digestion. Because I think that a lot of the time, particularly in Western culture, we run around having a sandwich on the go and we're constantly in fight or flight mode. So that there's kind of, I mean, without getting too sad and say like the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system, like if your body's in stress mode, all your blood is obviously going around trying to fight the boar or whatever it is. Like back in the day, that's what it would have been doing. And we're expecting our bodies to digest food whilst it's in that fight or flight mode, and it's just never going to happen. So I think that's one of the things. And then diet wise, I mean, we still have McDonald's at 3 a.m. if we're drunk. Like it's not,
of course. I'd be disappointed if you did.
Yeah.
Chicken nuggets at 3 a.m. always.
But I think the main thing for us is like the processed food thing. So like when we talk about the microbiome, by the way, the microbiome is basically all the pathogens, viruses and bacteria in and around us. And the reason we talk about gut health is because most of them are housed in our gut. And all these bacteria are so important. Like we can get onto the mental health bit, but they do so many jobs and night shift in your gut, and they're just really, really important, and they outnumber your human cells just. They thought it was 10 to 1, but now it's more like 1.3 to 1. So they're really important. And when we eat processed foods, it basically stifles all the good bacteria in your gut and lets the bad ones kind of roam free. Mm-hmm. And like I also think a good kind of, I mean, it's a very sensationalised example, but Tim Spector, the scientist that we do the research with, he put his son on the McDonald's diet for 2 weeks. He only had to eat McDonald's. And obviously at first, same as us, he was like, yes, only have to eat McDonald's. And actually his... that was about 4 years ago, and his microbiome still hasn't recovered. So some of the bacteria that he lost still hasn't come back. So when you look, obviously that's one person and quite an extreme thing. Yeah. But when you think about all the like emulsifiers and preservatives and stuff that are in the food that we eat, if that's preserving the food to have a long shelf life, think what's doing to all the living stuff in our gut. Mm-hmm. And it does kind of make sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think as well, like, it's hard to get away from though, because all the supermarkets nowadays, a lot of it's processed because it's got to have shelf life.
Yeah.
So I've just tried to more just cook more stuff at home, and I'm not an angel. I'll still grab a sandwich sometimes for lunch. But I think tipping that balance into doing it more often than not is key. And then adding fermented foods. So things like sauerkraut, kombucha.
What the hell is that?
Everyone goes, our mum's like, oh, that stuff makes me gag. I'm not having that. Makes me gag. But sourdough's fermented. So that can be like your entry level fermented food.
Right.
Sourdough bread. But people have been eating these sort of things for ages. And now you go into supermarkets and they're charging £6 for it. And it's like, it's cabbage in a jar. Right. Let's be serious. Sourdough is literally cabbage in a jar. And kombucha is like fermented tea. So we've started to swap that for like Diet Cokes sort of thing. So it's like a fizzy drink, but it's good for your gut.
Does it actually taste nice?
Yeah, it does. There's a few of them out there now that actually do. Like, if you make it yourself at home, it's quite pungent. Yeah, the ones that you can buy, the ones that you can buy actually taste all right.
Right.
Yeah. And then the other kind of simple one is fibre. So like fibre is kind of like the unsexy hero of nutrition. No one talks about it. It's like grandads and prunes. That's what you think about. Like when we first were going through the research, we were like, what you mean like all bran? And they were like, yeah, sort of. But fibre basically bulks your stool. So like bulks your poo. But also it feeds the good bacteria in your gut as well. So it's got like a kind of double pronged use, and we only eat about half the recommended daily intake of fibre. And it's easy, it's like something we already have, you've just got to really be having more of it. But we just thought it was like cereals, but it's in all fruit and veg, whole grains, all that sort of thing. So it is easy to get in when you know
So is it the good and bad bacteria then that affects your mental health, or what is it about your gut then that affects it?
So there's a thing called the vagus nerve, which is essentially like a
Vegas.
Vegas as in Las Vegas.
I love
no,
it.
That's what we said. We were like, oh, do you mean like Las Vegas? Like, no, no, it's V-A-G-U-S.
I'm
like,
oh, sorry.
But
that was our
thing.
Very first question.
Yeah. And basically that's the kind of motorway system that runs from your brain to your gut. And before they thought that was a one-way system. So for example, when we're nervous, we get butterflies in our stomach, like gut instinct, all that sort of thing. But now science is starting to emerge that that's actually a two-way system. So what's going on in your gut can travel back up to your brain. Mm-hmm. And there's a bit of your brain called the amygdala, which is the bit of your brain that basically shows how emotions can affect you.
Right.
And there's new research coming out to show that your gut microbiome can influence that. So if that's not working properly, or it's overactive, then it can increase anxiety. So we've got a new big campaign out with Anxiety UK. We've got a series of infographics and stuff talking about the relationship between gut health and mental health. Also, like, your gut produces loads of, like, serotonin, dopamine, GABA.
GABA.
What does GABA do again?
It's the one, so we've got this in all our infographics, but, like, dopamine obviously gives you, like, when you're exercising, the kind of high five.
Right. Or when you get a like on Instagram.
Entirely.
Yeah. And serotonin's like your happy hormone. So yeah, and when you think like they're all produced in your gut, then it's got to be functioning properly in order for that to happen. And then also like stress, you produce lots of cortisol when you're stressed, and that can, like, without getting too sciencey and biological, but that can basically affect like the blood flow and stuff to your gut, and affect the bacteria and how they produce things, and how like the balance of good bacteria and bad bacteria happens. The thing about mental health and food is that mental health is obviously, as you know, multifactorial. Mm-hmm. And it's a difficult message to say, like, nutrition is one part of that. So it's quite a difficult message to talk about it, nutrition in isolation, because you can't just go, have some sourdough and you'll clear your depression. It's like, and as much as a load of tabloids would love for that to happen, yeah, in the way. And a lot of the studies as well that are coming out have been done on mice. So again,
unless you're Mickey Mouse, sure.
Aye. So there's more studies needed in humans, but like all of the scientists that we spoke to, including like immunologists, because 60% of your immune system is housed in your gut. So when you think, like, everyone just thinks mental, that taking supplements and things on top of it is going to help, but actually when you think about your gut, it's like, it's the main gateway from the outside in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like what we put in it really affects us. And what we found out, we went to go and speak to like epigeneticists.
What are they?
Easy for you to say with my braces. they talk about like genetics, because basically you can mutate your DNA through what you eat. So right, what you eat affects your kids and your grandkids, and that's what's passed down.
Don't tell me that.
I know, like, mentally.
Well, that's rude.
That's the thing where we like don't shout about it too much, because it could be overwhelming. Like,
yeah,
you just like feel, I think parents feel guilty as it is for, yeah, do you know what I mean, just everything.
I ate so much fruit and nut while I was pregnant with my first kid. He's screwed, mate.
I mean, anything to get you through pregnancy. Honestly,
it's got raisins in it, right?
Yeah, and nuts are really good source of fibre. Yeah, exactly.
Great. So I'll just add that to my list of anxieties, guys.
I know. Yeah, but fair, dark chocolate is very good for your gut.
Yeah, but it's so rubbish compared to dairy.
Yeah. I mean, as well,
you got the fruit and nut in there, two out of three. Yeah. Two out of the three things, right, in a fruit and nut.
Sorry, carry on.
No. Yeah, so that's, and now they are using mindfulness and yoga for the treatment of IBS and things like that. So I think it's all starting to come.
Mm.
The difficult thing is like getting the message over, like we said, without scaremongering people, but also with enough urgency that it's like, guys, could we start like listening to this? Because honestly, our diets when we were growing up were shocking. Like, my granny used to make us mince sandwiches, deep fried mince sandwiches. I'm like, I don't even know how I would do that.
For lunch, we genuinely would have a chip roll, a Greg softie, and pick a mix and a sausage roll for our break every single day.
And 10 facts.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, the perfect diet.
Horrendous.
Which I think the problem now is people are restricting all of these things without actually needing to, like, because it's worked for one person on Instagram and everyone's copied them. Like,
oh, I jumped on the celery, don't you?
Oh,
worry.
Did you?
Yeah.
Sorry, mate. Sorry to, it's a load of nonsense.
Burst that bubble. Everyone's scared of gluten now. Actually, the percentage of people that are actually intolerant to gluten is so small.
Mm-hmm.
But we all just think, and actually, a lot of the things that are in gluten-free, like products are worse for you than
they're full
the
of other stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's a difference between allergies and intolerances as well. And I think that, and all these intolerance tests have one advice: we will please do not waste your money on all of that nonsense.
There's no way that it's like you're allergic to wine. Oh, I'll just do it again. I'll do it again.
And you know the reason that all that stuff up, because stuff comes up, it's because it's stuff that you've eaten.
Yeah.
So it's basically stuff that you've eaten in the past 2 days. They go, all right, you're allergic to that, because that's because it's in your bloodstream, or they base it on inflammatory markers, which I don't know how that is like some warped science. If anyone has found a test that works, please do let us know. But we've got a team of scientists, and none of them have found
it. And when we get ours done, we have to get like stool tests, blood tests. Like, there's so many different tests they do on us to be able to say what, like, we've just done one that. So basically, when your blood sugar levels spike, that means it should sort of means that that can mean that that specific food is bad for you. But like, I was spiking at bananas, and you would think that was good for you, but personally for me it's not. And that's like the really difficult message, is when people start to learn about gut health, they're like, right, what do I need to do? And you're like, there is some, obviously the top tips are like the fiber, fermented foods,
variety.
So having as much different fruit and vegetables as you possibly can. But it is so personalised. Like, if Lisa and I can't have the same diet, then no one can.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about tuning into your body. And I think that we've all lost the ability to do that, because unless we're hungover or we're ill, we rarely just tune in and go, actually, how am I feeling?
This episode of Open Mind is brought to you by Very.co.uk. New toys have landed at Very. Find all the toys everyone's talking about, including Barbie, LOL dolls and Frozen. Go to Very.co.uk and shop now. Have you found that being identical twins, that's kind of hindered or helped your mental health? Obviously, maybe at different stages in your life. Or,
definitely.
Or
I think we're a psychiatrist's dream. Identical twins, literally. Yeah. I went actually to go and start counselling again last week, because I had like I had a bit of a break, and then I was just like, you know, you can feel it all build up. And I was like, I'm not going to just get back and get back on that saddle. And you could just see her sort of rubbing her hands when I said, that was identical twin. Like, yes, minefield. But I think as well, like, we were brought up with our cousins there was four of us under four. So it's very difficult to separate, like, what was because we were twins. And we never wanted to work together.
And do you have any other siblings?
No.
So it is you two.
My mum was, like, ready to have three, and then we came along and she lived in, like, a top floor tenement flat at 27. And she was like, no, thank you.
No.
They are more than enough.
But what heroes used to, like, so there was four of us, like, when my cousins were there, and she, like, top floor flat, she used to run up with a baby, like, a single baby each time, and put us all in the flat one at a time. I'm
my goodness.
We all moan now about stuff, eh? And you're like...
But there are times where you didn't get on, or I don't know, like...
Yeah, well, we went to different unis, so I went to uni in Scotland, and Lisa went, and like, we didn't want to work together at all. Even at school, like, we were in separate classes at primary school. At high school, we took, like, the complete opposite ends of
my godchildren are twins, and one of my really good friends has got twins, and it's that thing at school where they're like, do we put them together in the same class, or do we separate them? It's always, like, such a conundrum.
We get so many phone calls from people that are... like, that are having twins, being like, hiya, my friend's friend's having twins. Could she give you a ring? I'm like, I have
to. Give my mum a ring.
Exactly. Phone Mother Max, she knows. But I think it was good for us, because we had different pals. Like, we were able to. And then when I moved to London, I think that was probably actually the start of my mental health. I mean, it was the start of my mental health problems, but I think there was a bit of, I was only 17. I'd only been to London once before. Like, I went to drama school, which is like the worst environment for that.
Mm.
And I think probably being apart from Alana was the main, it was like separation anxiety for quite a lot of it.
How did you find that you could help Lisa with?
Just talking about it, really, because I think we were very much brought up that, you know, even when Dad died, like, we hardly really talked about it to each other. I think it's just because you don't want to see the other one upset.
Mm.
And I think Lisa didn't really want to tell me about all her mental health issues, and we were so far apart, because I think she didn't want to worry me. And then when you finally came home and told us one Christmas, I was like, right, this is it. You need to speak about it when you're feeling like this.
Mm.
And I think that really helped, and we have that now. But we have to sometimes, it's difficult, because when you work together, it's you just constantly talk about work. So we always try and schedule sister time.
Mm-hmm.
And
was she
talk about stuff like that.
When she first told you all?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because we didn't see any of the symptoms. You know, when she Skyped us, because that's what it was in those days. When she Skyped us with a headset. She was just putting on an act like everything was absolutely fine.
Mm.
And we were super shocked. But, you know, that was like, God, 13 years ago, and we were like, what do you mean? What do you mean mental health? And what did, you know, it's like, it was like so difficult for her to try and explain how she felt.
Did you find it hard to understand?
Yeah, I think as well, like with OCD, it's kind of a, people make a joke of it so much when terms of like, I'm OCD about tidying and OCD about this. So that's what people, and I didn't actually have compulsions as part of it. So it wasn't like I was washing or having lots of things. It's
so
just like more like obsessive thoughts. It was like obsessive thoughts. So I think, and it was obviously like a safety thing. So I kind of thought that I was going to be attacked at some point. So I would basically like hold myself up in the house and not leave for like 6 days when it was at its worst.
And was there anything that triggered that or not? It was just...
Yeah, I mean, I think there was probably like, I mean, it was so irrational that you can't ever.
They always
it's
are.
Always are, yeah. So I don't think I would ever be able to get to the bottom of it. Yeah. But I think it was probably like a safety thing. It was because I was out of control. Like, I was so young and lived in a new city with no one that I knew. And as well, like when I went to drama school, it was like, there was 12 of us in the class. Most other people I went to boarding school, they knew how good the school, I went to Central, so people knew how good the school was and stuff. And I was just sort of like tiny wee fish in a massive pond, like just from no one in our family. We were the first to go to uni, like no one has really done that before where we were from. So it was like, and it was difficult. And I think that the main thing was telling the family, I just thought they were going to force me to come home.
Right.
So, and I think that you put on a brave face and you'll be the same. I think having kids, oh God, that must be even worse when you put on a brave face, but you are actually only lying to yourself. And then when it eventually comes out, and as well, like you don't really want people to ask you questions about it. Like I just remember thinking, I don't really want to be asked about it.
Especially if you don't really understand it.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
But I think as well, like with anxiety thing, I think everyone has it to a great degree, because like I have this thing where I have to check all the plugs in the house 20 million times before I leave. I'm like convinced the dog's going to jump up and put the cooker on himself and it's going to put the fire on. Do you know what I mean? Like irrational thoughts, like we all have them. And I think like you do have to...
It's how you deal with them, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. And I think as well, you can't control what the world's going to do. Like, I remember when Dad died, everyone said to us, oh, you'll have no more sudden deaths in your life. That's it. You won't get that phone because Dad died of heart attack. And I was like, all right, yeah. And then I was like, obviously, because my whole thing was not being in control and people dying. So when Dad died, I was like...
Did it come from that? Or was that before that?
No, before it, yeah. So when Dad died, I was like, oh, of course he has.
Yeah.
And then like 3 weeks ago, the same thing happened to my puppy. And I was like, oh my God. And then literally I was telling my friend Michelle... like two Fridays ago, and we were sitting in this pub. I mean, it's comedy when you think about it. And I was saying, when we got a phone call about Ralph, I was like, oh my God, blah, blah, blah. And this pigeon literally fell out of the sky and died on the pavement, right? And I was like, this is not happening. I was like, is this the Truman Show? I was like, what's going on?
Do you feel safe around her?
Yeah, literally. I was I'm really cursed. I'm like, and now, but obviously, these things are random. And but we check.
But it's the way your brain goes, isn't it?
Totally.
Like, so now for you, it's like confirmed. You're like, right, yeah. So all those things that I thought when I was younger, like I had the same with roller coasters. I would never go on them. And I always used to say, well, what if they fall off or what if they crash? And then Smiler happened. And, it's happened quite a few times. So I'm like, I told you. Yeah. I told you all. Yeah, yeah. It took about 20 years, but I knew it.
I was right. Yeah. And I think as well, I think that's why counselling and stuff helped, because literally when the pigeon fell on the floor, that's when I was like, okay, and we're going back to counselling. Because I was like, I know my brain will keep just going.
What was
going
wrong
there.
With the pigeon?
Honestly, right, so my friend just came to meet us and he does like clay pigeon shooting and stuff.
Right.
And I was like, could you tell me what happened with this pigeon, please? And it was still like on the ground. And he was like, genuinely, that's just fallen out the sky. Because it didn't hit a window or anything. It literally had just fallen out the sky.
Had a heart attack
and fell out the sky. I was like, okay. But yeah, so totally random.
So
but
I'm you like, picked up the phone. Rang the therapist and was like, I need to come back.
If anyone wants the opening scene of a sitcom, you can have it. Just give me 10% royalties.
What made you then go into the Priory? What point?
So Mum and Dad, for some reason, had private healthcare. They both worked for like Standard Life Insurance. So I think as part of that, they've got it. And yeah, I remember going to my doctor and just being like, hey, I haven't left the house for quite some time. And as well, I had a thing like body dysmorphia with my arms, so I hadn't had my arms out for a year and a half, and you don't realize until someone sits you down and goes, hiya. And I mean, my arms were absolutely fine, of course they were. But
our dad used to say, what, when she used to come home for Christmas and that, what have you come dressed as?
I'd just be like all covered
all
up
layers.
All these layers. And then when I went, I was an outpatient at the Priory, but it was amazing. I was only there for like a couple months. So I was just
go once a week.
Yeah. And I think when you're there,
you get quite a lot of perspective on, like, a lot of the other people that had OCD were inpatients and they were there getting a lot of group therapy and stuff. And I think it was actually good for me to see that although I felt like my symptoms were very extreme, which of course they were in the grand scheme of things, like, it was quite good for me to see that actually there was a lot of people here my age that needed help as well, like, and a lot of people there were the same age as me in their 20s.
Yeah, that's what I said.
And you're like, oh yeah, yeah, yay, because you think you're going to go in there and it's going to be like loads of people with really extreme things, or because I think the Priory as well is kind of like glamorized a bit.
Oh, like, totally, yeah, it's like the one everyone knows about.
Yeah,
it's almost like, oh, you've been in the Priory, cool.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like,
like, it's a retreat.
Yeah, you're exactly. Like a celeb.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think when I got there, I was like, oh, it's actually quite normal. And then there's a guy called Dr. David Veal there who, like, is specialist in OCD, and he did like my first thing. And I actually think one of the things that helped me was seeing it all written out in a really clinical way.
That's exactly the same thing as I always say. They'd explained to me in a medical way what was happening to my body with my anxiety and with my depression. I was like, oh, okay, so I'm not crazy. I mean, I am.
Yes.
But, like, there
it's
is a reason.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah. Rather than just feeling completely out of control. And then I was like, okay, I can kind of understand it all now.
Yeah.
And that's so interesting you say it, because I'm exactly the same.
And it helps you sort of dissociate yourself with it, because it's like you obviously react in a really emotional way to it. And I think, like, just all got a bit... when you put it in that context, like when I went to go and see the council last week, I was like, so my dad died and then my dog died and I run my own business and we're about to close an investment round and it's all, and she was like, this is all really stressful things. Like, that's all, like, all of these things in quick succession is not like, that's like difficult things to go through. And I was like, oh yeah, so it is. Whoa, got me.
And a new therapist then?
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
You don't have one that you stick with?
Well, I did, but yeah, she went away on sabbatical.
Oh, what a cow.
I know. I was like, hello, can
come
I,
back.
Can I call you? Are you having fun? Can I watch that video? Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Skype, no?
But sometimes I think it's quite good to, although change. I went to one once and she was like, yeah, she was just too, I mean, it depends what, like, I quite like someone that's quite emotionally driven, like more like a psychiatrist than a psychotherapist, who's going to, like, sort of, when they say back to you, oh, well, that's very whatever, like the names of stuff, I quite like to be able, like, feel comfortable and talk about a thing.
No, it's gone. Sorry. I didn't want you to say something good and then I see.
I'm going to see.
Okay.
But I think as well, like, everyone should go to therapy or counselling as just as standard.
Yeah. You know what? It's funny because it's so, like, we've always said, oh, it's so American. Like, I remember, like, back in the, oh, the Americans, you know, it's like a joke, isn't it? Oh, my therapist
says.
Yeah,
my shrink.
Yeah. And, like, I think they kind of have a good thing going, because it is true. Like, everyone, as you say, everyone suffers in their own little way a little bit. And it is so, like, you can have these thoughts in your head for so long and then you go and say it out loud and you're like, yeah, that's really quite stupid. I've been telling myself that for months.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So you need to say it out loud to go, yep, so that doesn't really make a huge amount of sense.
Yeah.
And you're like, and the thing is, though, and as well, like, you, Alana's like, yeah, I don't need that, blah, blah. The explosions that she has, I'm like, like, when Dad died, Alana was like, I just completely pretended it wasn't happening for like a year and just like, smoked 1 million cigarettes and didn't speak to anyone and played Candy Crush for a year.
Perfect.
Yeah.
You know,
I was like,
that's
is how
life.
I'm dealing. And I used to go to DJ sets and just remember thinking, this is not real life. Like, why are you all being happy? Stop being happy. And then Alana was like, fine, organised all the funeral, like, amazing. And then one night, she just literally exploded, like, Bride of Chucky.
Rough.
And, like, red wine everywhere. Sick red wine, phoning everyone, like, rah! And I was like,
rough. Just anger, pure anger.
It was like,
you've puked.
A puke time.
Yeah,
I got really drunk.
Oh, right.
And then it just all came out. I look quite literally like the Bride of Chucky.
Really?
just like pure anger at the world.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute anger.
And is that how you deal with things in general?
Yeah, probably. Of? Yeah. Mm. Quite extreme. And I remember, like, I got married like 2 years after Dad died. And I just remember sometimes just being so angry. Like, when we used to go to weddings and their dad was walking them down the aisle and I would be furious. Mm-hmm. Like, actually furious. And then, like, my husband would just say, like, do you want to stop, lay off the drink? Then I'd just be like, wah. Okay, so I think that's just my idea. I definitely do need to go to counselling. Like, for, I think I'm in your camp, like, I think everyone should go and talk through things.
But I think anyone who's lost a parent,
yeah,
I mean, I'd say you should probably give it a go.
Yeah. I will do it one day. Just make sure they're not going to go on sabbatical.
What's the thing about not going?
Yeah. No, I genuinely don't know. I think I'm scared to go.
You're scared to kind of open the box.
Yeah. And unravel it all. And it's weird. Yeah, like, look, Alana's husband is really open about everything like that. Like, he speaks about it loads, and
he suffers bad with anxiety.
So does he see a therapist?
Yeah. Okay. He loves it. He gets excited to go. He absolutely loves it. And then he'll come home and tell me everything that's happened, and it really genuinely does help him.
So you're surrounded by people that are close to you that do it.
I know. It's interesting as well, like the alcohol thing, because I've noticed, like, when obviously, like, alcohol, red wine, good for your gut, by the way. Well, it's not.
Oh, is that why you were drinking it?
Yeah, exactly. That's my excuse. In fact, yeah, it's meant to be a medicinal glass, not
three bottles.
Yeah, but I've noticed that there's so many different things that play a part, like caffeine and alcohol. Like, we are just like, our moods are so artificial now, a wee bit, like caffeine to bring you up, alcohol to bring you down. I just think we stopped it for a month.
Alcohol and caffeine? Everything.
We basically
anything fun?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We had to go on this gut makeover thing for like a month. And we had you weren't allowed sugar, grains, like literally anything. I was actually dating this architect at the time. We don't talk this last. And Luke was like, you do know he's beige? And I was like, no, it's not. It's great. And then when I started drinking again, I was like, oh yeah, maybe it is. bless him. He's married now for babies. At the time of his life.
He's happy. Someone else can have him.
Yeah, exactly. And I realised I was getting up at 6 in the morning and being like, yay. And just like sort of, I realised how much alcohol and caffeine was really affecting my moods.
Mm. And that's why it really helps with gut stuff. Side of it, like knowing the science behind anxiety, I think really helps.
Yeah.
Well, it helps me a lot with it. Because you know, if you've been drinking, you wake up with more than that pure fear.
I've never had that.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God, lucky, Amy. You are lucky.
I don't think I drink enough.
Well, exactly. Come on a night out, was.
No, exactly.
Oh, no.
But that's the thing, knowing the science behind that, I'm like, that's why I'm feeling anxious. I actually didn't do anything terrible last night. It's scientifically why I'm feeling anxious, and I just need to drink more water. I also think with the nutrition part of mental health, like, it's something that, another thing that's within our control. So like, obviously with mental health, and if you're going to see someone, you'll be given tools to try and help you to deal with it, particularly with CBT. But like, nutrition is something that we can all control. Like, we control, as much as we don't think we do, what we put in our bodies and what we don't. And I think that's actually a really empowering thing. Like, yeah, it can be really scary and confusing when people say, that's got artificial things in it or whatever, or that's overprocessed. But actually, it's really cool that we've got access to any food that we want.
So cool, man.
It's really rare. So cool, man.
So cool, man.
I do think, though, sometimes for me, it's having that control rather than so I started doing some intermittent fasting and I was like, oh, I feel great. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, I don't know if it is actually the fasting that's making me feel good, or it's the fact that I just feel like I've taken some sense of control instead of just every time I feel shit going to the cupboard and eating a bit of chocolate that's not going to make me feel any better.
Yeah.
Like,
I love fasting, it makes me feel better.
Really?
Yeah.
I was going to ask your opinion on
fasting. I fast a lot of the time, and there's a lot of science back in that fasting is actually good for you,
but they don't have, science has been done on mice
and they don't have long-term effects of it. So especially with women, they're now starting to find that fasting affects our hormones.
So basically, if you've got like thyroid issues as well, you should probably like avoid fasting. But for some reason, like for some people, if you do it and it makes you feel good, go for gold. Like, there's no, I think a lot of the studies have been done around fasting and weight loss, which can be quite misleading, because obviously if you're eating within a smaller time frame, you're probably going to eat less, so you're going to lose weight.
Yeah.
So it's difficult.
Although I did it for 3 weeks, I lost no weight.
Yeah.
I was raging.
You've
I was
got
like,
to lose, mate.
I was like, I've not even lost half a pound. How do you not even lose half? I was raging. Then I was like, right, great, I'm not doing it. What would be your like takeaway tip for you on how to deal with someone with mental health, and then for you for helping your mental health?
I think thinking about it scientifically, you know, and just conversation. I think opening up the conversation and just being there for someone really, and talking about it and not thinking, I think you have to, if you're experiencing it with someone, I think you're the one that has to bring up the conversation.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important to do that, just checking in and asking how they're feeling really.
Mm-hmm.
I think obviously mine's the same as everyone else's, like go and get help if you think that you need it. And if that's not maybe for you, then make sure you're scheduling time to sit down and think about where you're at and all that sort of thing. Because I just think we never do that. And we don't. And if you don't want to go and speak to the professional about it, then find someone like a twin sister to talk about it too, because it's important. And also just read up on everything that you can. It's very difficult, obviously, when you're in the... It's difficult. Like, I wish I could give advice when I'm in the thick of it.
Yeah,
like, you know what I mean? And you can't. Yeah. So it's difficult. It's always good or fine to give advice in retrospect, but that might not be the advice that I would give if I was in full swing. But for now, that would be it. It's like, go and seek help because there's loads more out there than there was even 5 years ago.
Oh, well, thanks. I mean, gut health for me has been like my new journey. So I was really excited to talk to you guys. I mean, you said a lot of words that I didn't understand and you told me a lot of foods that I'm supposed to eat that all sound disgusting, but I will try and give it a go. And my takeaway from this is go see a therapist.
Yes, I will. I will. I'll report back in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, girls. Thanks. This episode of Open Mind the podcast was sponsored by very.co.uk.